This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the World Night Special. Tonight, Washington exclusive, preview of the Marshall Plan by detail. London, by-election with a meaning all its own. Vancouver, drama and tragedy on the shores of the Pacific Northwest. Hollywood, preview of Santa Claus. Special report, more scandal in high places. Those are the headlines. I'll be back in a moment with news of the world.
How about it, friends? Everything all set for the big Thanksgiving feast tomorrow? Well, let's have a look at that market basket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a turkey and the sage for the dressing. There are the cranberries, there's the pumpkin for the pies, and oh, lots of other things that are going to develop into something mighty good to eat. Oh, yes, there's the Alka-Seltzer, too. Looks like the lady who did this shopping knew what she was doing. Chances are she's prepared many a Thanksgiving dinner, and she's watched the folks around her table forget their good judgment and eat too much than was wise for them. So this time, she's going to be prepared by having Alka-Seltzer handy. Now, how about you? Is your home well supplied with Alka-Seltzer? Nothing quite like it, you know, when it comes to relief from occasional after-eating distress, such as may happen tomorrow. So be an extra good hostess, lady, and have plenty of Alka-Seltzer on hand for the comfort of your guests. Now, when you go to your drugstore for Alka-Seltzer, buy two packages instead of one, and always keep an extra package handy. Your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60-cent size packages, so get some tonight. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
The special edition of News of the World presents tonight a complete preview of the long-range Marshall Plan, nearly a week before it goes to Congress. The overall plan, as advertised, is $16 to $20 billion spread over 4 years. Now, the breakdown. Emergency aid between December the 1st and March the 31st, $597 million for France, Italy, and Austria. That's the $597 million you're hearing about these days. $500 million to cover the additional cost of occupation of Germany until March the 31st. We're shouldering some or most of Britain's obligations in Germany, and $60 million interim aid to China. Add them up, and the total of emergency aid, that is only to March the 31st, by official estimate is $2,657,000,000, up to, as we said, April the 1st next year. But from April the 1st to 1948 to June 30th, 1949, Truman or Marshall aid will be proposed next week by the president to the tune of $7.5 billion. About half of this will be in the form of outright grants to the 16 nations of Western Europe. There will be $300 million for China, a stopgap sum. Now, what about the 3 years following, from mid-1949 to mid-1951? The administration will not draw up a detailed blueprint beyond 18 months for the simple and understandable reason that guessing about crops, prosperity, or the lack of them beyond that period is definitely, as they say in the current movie, is definitely fun and fancy-free. There will be a principle, however, and a few financial conditions attached. The principle is this. The 16 nations of Western Europe must show, after the first year, that their demands on the United States for help are on a descending scale. That is, that they're taking hold themselves and will, if they follow their own schedule and ours, they'll be out of hock, or rather they'll stop going into hock to Uncle Sam in 4 years' time. So, roughly, the 16 nations must show that they can get along on $5 billion the second year, say, $2.5 to $3 billion the third, and $1.5 billion or so in the fourth year. So much for principle. Now for conditions. We would insist on a multilateral agreement among all the 16 powers to carry out these conditions and the overall agreement. Then we would have unilateral agreements, that is, agreements country by country or treaties to cover any funds sent to each country. And as a further condition, the United States expects to police all grants given to European countries, that is, to see to it that money granted for food is not in turn used to inflate the currencies of the receiving country. Now, what about all this money? Will it really accomplish the purpose? Will Italy, France, and the other nations of Western Europe get back on their feet? I've asked many an expert in Washington this question. I've asked them for you. The best answer I can get is that it's a gamble, pure and simple. We may not win. Again, we may. The chances are that we will not do any better than 50-50. But if we don't make the investment, there'll be chaos in a vacuum, and into that vacuum will step Soviet Russia. You pay your money, or you take your chances. And in this situation, the Truman administration has cast the die for better or for worse. Tonight, an administration spokesman tells News of the World that the administration must tell the American public between now and the first of the year, certainly before next spring, that we're going to have to make a sacrifice in our daily lives to meet the deliveries to Europe in case we decide to make them. Sorry to cover so much unexciting material tonight, but there it is, and it's something that's not above and beyond you and me. What we eat and buy and how we live in the years to come, all of these are intimately tied up with European recovery. Now for our on-the-spot news coverage around the world. First, to Britain. Here's Henry Cassidy in London.
A town called Gravesend, a riverside industrial community of 60,000 citizens at the mouth of the Thames, has taken public attention here, at least temporarily, away from the Council of Foreign Ministers. Gravesend held a by-election to fill its vacant seat in the House of Commons, and being an average English town, its vote was considered an important test of the Labour government and the Conservative opposition. The result was expected 2 hours ago, but because of the heavy vote brought out by the campaign of leaders from both sides and the close contest between the two, the count has not yet been completed. Depending on how it goes, the result will be taken either as a demand for an end to the post-war austerity of the Labour government or as support for its socialist program. The Council of Foreign Ministers, after two meetings, now has an agenda. The Big Four have agreed on the items they should discuss and the order in which they should be taken. The Austrian treaty comes first, a concession by Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov, but actually this item goes to the deputies, and next comes the German peace treaty, a concession by Secretary of State Marshall. The agreement was reached only after bitter words from Molotov about imperialism that were quickly dismissed by the others. All four delegations tonight have been dusting off the old speeches they have already made in London, Paris, and Moscow about Germany. You'll hear them for the next 10 days or so, and then comes the really critical period of the conference. This is Henry Cassidy in London.
Now to the far west of America and Canada for two stories. To British Columbia for a ship disaster off the storm-raked shores of the Pacific Northwest, and to Hollywood for a preview of Christmas. First, to Dennis Sweeting of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation at Vancouver, British Columbia.
On Monday night, Canada's wild and dangerous west coast claimed its latest victims. The American transport Clarksdale Victory went aground on lonely, uninhabited Hippa Island. It's about 125 air miles from Prince Rupert, 150 from Ketchikan in Alaska, and 500 odd from Vancouver. A little while ago, I talked to Captain Elford, port warden at Prince Rupert, and he told me what those near the spot think must have happened. She went aground between 10 and 11 Monday night. A high sea ran, and there wouldn't have been a chance in the world of safely launching a lifeboat. Ships headed for the scene, but they couldn't approach her, and they couldn't get a man ashore. When they arrived, the vessel was submerged, except for her forecastle. A plane reported three men on shore, but Captain Elford told me that everyone doubted that if the men were there, they could be from the vessel. A party of British Columbia Provincial Police, led by Indian guides, headed across the Queen Charlotte Islands to approach by land. Yesterday morning in Vancouver, men of the Canadian Army waited to fly to the island. Weather prevented it. Today the waves have died down, and men of the American Coast Guard climbed on the wreck. There they found four men alive, suffering terribly from exposure, but still alive. And with them were four others dead. A small search party's been put ashore, and it found nothing. There's little hope that any of the rest of the 51 men on the Clarksdale Victory will be found. The sea has claimed them for its own. This is Dennis Sweeting of the CBC in Vancouver, British Columbia, and now to David Anderson in Hollywood.
It's the night before Thanksgiving, and all through movie land, the word has got around that Santa Claus has come to town. Even that bad widow boy, Junior, found out about it, and Red Skelton dooted it again. He just threw a tremendous master switch to turn on the greatest concentration of light ever seen in a nighttime parade. I'm standing on the famous terrace at Hollywood's Radio City at Sunset and Vine. As Red threw that switch, the most famous movie and radio stars in the world congregated before me to start their annual parade of stars down Hollywood Boulevard. Beautiful Alice Faye managed to push by Red and snip a ribbon of picture film to start the annual march down Santa Claus Lane, a lane which is one gigantic ribbon of light and color. Huge Christmas trees with reds and blues and greens in great profusion, every storefront in its best Christmas dress. And from the way it looks from here, everyone in Southern California lining the curb, more than a million persons. Each star in this Santa parade has his own float. There's Skelton tearing up his home with saw and hatchet, pursued by his long-suffering mother. He wants to scramble off to see Santa Claus, but Santa has his own troubles. He has to ride with Jack Benny, and if Benny never rides again, he admits his beautiful float is far better than his old Maxwell ever was. And scrambling off his float up here to a microphone is Ralph Edwards, the man who knows. Ralph, what's on your mind?
Second for Santa Claus, first for me, 13 for wreath, 7 for tree. Bring me an auto, a book, and a ball, and I'll say Merry Christmas in spring, not in fall.
Thank you, Ralph Edwards. Right before me is Fibber McGee and Molly on a replica of 79 Wistful Vista. Down a bit further, I see Eddie Cantor, President Cantor, if you please. He's all by himself on a miniature of the Capitol building in Washington. And by gosh, I see everybody wants to get into the act. At the tail end of the parade is Jimmy Durante playing the piano under a giant Christmas bell. This is David Anderson in Hollywood.
The trail of dishonesty in high places in the backwash of war led tonight straight to the Army and Air Force lists of officers who have received medical discharges since VJ Day. Major General Harry Vaughan, the President's aide, opened up the touchy question by direction of Mr. Truman himself. He sent a letter today to Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, ordering him to hand over the names of all officers who hold a medical discharge. General Vaughan said any legitimate disability will not be questioned. But he knows of one officer who holds a medical discharge and at the same time is holding down a $75,000 job in civilian life. If a man is handicapped, said the general, to the extent that he gets tax-free disability pay, he's not worth $75,000 to private industry. And reporter Jerry Green, able reporter Jerry Green in the Washington Times-Herald reports that 364 generals are now getting disability pay tax-free. And News of the World can report to you exclusively that this trail of possible dishonesty was opened up by Senator Ferguson in the case of General Benny Myers, who received a medical discharge while also piling up profits pyramided on wartime investments. Senator Ferguson asked General Myers several questions in his hearings about pay and how he got a medical discharge. President Truman apparently studied the record and asked at once, before the Senate War Investigating Committee got back to the trail, for reports. And there are reports in Washington unverified tonight that some officers, a few anyway, got their disability tax-free medical discharges by the civil expedient of a telephone call to a hospital. And that's what happened in Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Did a busy day leave you feeling irritable and upset with a headache? If so, for fast relief, try a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer. Since Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved before you take it, the pain-relieving agent's ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there faster, gives relief quicker. Just try it and see. Remember, your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60 cent size packages.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiples give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for strength, purity, quality, and
penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. New York, James C. Petrillo has lifted a musicians' union ruling that has prevented the use of musicians on cooperative radio network programs. The ruling provided that in every such case, a standby musician had to be hired in every city where the program was heard. Standbys will not have to be hired any longer. Hollywood, RKO Studios has announced that producer Adrian Scott and director Edward Dimitrik have been dismissed because they refused to tell the Congressional Un-American Activities Committee whether or not they were communists. Montgomery, Alabama. Michigan has captured two convicts who escaped from Alabama. She's returning one and keeping the other, a chap named Virgil O. Miller, because he also escaped some time ago from a Michigan prison. Alabama prison director Frank Boswell is all smiles. This fellow Miller, he says, can eat 25 to 35 biscuits at a meal and devour other food in like proportion. We're mighty proud to let Michigan have him until the high cost of living comes down, and that's the news of the world. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.